Today's Homespun C-SPAN begins a series on Low Power FM, that is LPFM. The U.S. House of Representative hearings you're going to hear on Homespun C-SPAN will address LPFM and other related issues. Domestic terrorism, such as the Tiller Killers and the whack job that shot up the Holocaust Museum, are dramatically increasing to a drumbeat from terrorist sympathizers on Faux News, Clear Channel, and the massive religious radio networks. We need to have LPFMs like WRIR in every city. Improvements in the condition of LPFM stations that could enable little WRIRs in every urbanized area are being considered right now. Improvements that could help WRIR have a much clearer signal with H.R. House Resolution 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009, currently in subcommittee. Remember that in Rwanda, the radical right got on the radio and urged on the killings, even calling out the locations of hiding genocide victims. Unfortunately, I see the U.S. is heading the same way. But rather than censorship, may a thousand flowers bloom. As an individual fan of freedom of speech and the value of unheard voices, I ask you to help every city have an LPFM like WRIR even better. You can ask your friends and family to call their Congress creator to become co-sponsor of H.R. 1147, Local Community Radio Act of 2009. This will also help WRIR have a clearer signal option. Please note the disclaimer at the beginning of these shows. This is just my personal opinion acknowledged by the Constitution. And so without further ado, here's the first segment of the hearings in the U.S. House Subcommittee on Communications, Technology, and the Internet. Three bills melded together in one hearing are H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connection Protection Act of 2009 regarding prisoners' ability to call their family, and H.R. 1084, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act, the CALM Act about the loud volume of television advertisement, and H.R. 1147, the Local Committee 2009 in the Rayburn House Office Building. We start with Representative Rick Boucher from Southwestern Virginia, Chair of the Subcommittee on Communications, Technology, and the Internet.
Today, the Subcommittee considers three standalone measures. The first of which is H.R. 1084, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act, otherwise known as the CALM Act, introduced by our colleague from California, Ms. Eshoo, in order to address a leading consumer complaint, the volume of advertisements on television. All of us have had the experience of enjoying a favorite program only to find ourselves scrambling for the remote control when at the commercial break, the volume of the television seems to double. I've co-sponsored the CALM Act, and I suspect that if enacted, this measure will become as popular as the legislation that created the Do Not Call list. I look forward to learning why the phenomenon of loud commercials exists and what we can do as policymakers in order to address that phenomenon. H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connection Protection Act, introduced by Chairman Rush, would address the serious matter of the rates that are paid by prison inmates for collect calling services. Inmates are literally a captive audience. They typically have no option for using the telephone to contact family and legal counsel other than making their calls from a prison payphone. The rates that are charged for those services are enormous and include not only a high per-minute rate for the service, but also per-call connection fees that can be as high as $4 per call. The burden of these charges often falls on those who are least able to afford the charges, the inmates who have virtually no income, and the members of their families who frequently face their own financial hardships. Phone service for inmates is a necessity. It is not a luxury. It is often their only link to family and attorneys, and therefore we hope that this morning the witnesses will tell us what may be done to ensure that prison inmates have access to this very necessary service at rates that are reasonably affordable. The third bill that we're hearing this morning is H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act, introduced by our colleagues Representatives Doyle and Terry. It would provide additional opportunities for low-power FM radio stations by allowing their operation on third adjacent channels to full-power radio stations. LPFM stations are typically community-based nonprofits. They operate usually at 100 watts or less of broadcast power and have a broadcast reach of only a few miles. They play a truly unique role in our media firmament. They're more likely than their full-power counterparts to be owned by women or by minorities. They're an important forum for local clergy, for politicians, for civil rights focused programs, and community leaders who seek to weigh in on local matters of public interest. They're also commonly found at our institutions of higher education across the United States. While expanding opportunities for more low-power FM stations is desirable, we must be certain that expanded low-power FM service is implemented in a way that does not jeopardize existing broadcast services, including non-commercial full-power FM stations. This morning, we're interested in how low-power FM stations on third adjacencies can protect existing services, including FM radio, emerging HD radio, and radio reading services. I want to welcome our witnesses and thank them for their attendance here this morning. We will turn to your testimony shortly, but at this time, I'm pleased to recognize other members of the subcommittee for their opening statements, and I'll call on the gentleman from Florida, the ranking Republican on our subcommittee, Mr. Stearns.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for having this hearing. We have nine alert, ready-to-go witnesses, and it's quite impressive. As you mentioned, we have three distinct pieces of legislation we're looking at. I'll go with one that you sort of mentioned in the last, which is H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connection Protection Act. As mentioned, would require the FCC to regulate telephone services to inmates in correctional facilities. Typically, a single carrier is selected through a competitive bidding process to provide the prisoner his phone service. And although services and rates vary by state or facility, inmates are often limited to making a collect call, and the rates charged are frequently a bit higher to help pay for these collect calls nationwide. Supporters of this legislation argue that prison call fees are too high, costing families too much to keep in touch with their relatives in jail and making it harder to rehabilitate criminals. Our nation's sheriffs have a unique perspective, however, since over 80% of the nation's local jails are simply under the jurisdiction of the sheriffs. So it's very good, Mr. Chairman, we have them here to testify, to give their side. This bill could lead to a prohibition on the payment of commissions to the correctional facilities by providers of the phone service. These commissions go to providing security measures to monitor non-privileged calls, to prevent illicit activities, and to pay for the cost of the telephone system itself. Without the commissions, these correctional facilities will either have to ask taxpayers to front the cost of the phone system or completely dismantle the program. In addition, these commissions are a main source of funding for many beneficial inmate programs, such as adult education, anti-recidivism programs, jail ministries, and substance abuse programs. For example, in New York, some funding from telephone commissions were used to provide free bus rides to the facilities for inmate family members. I certainly understand the hardship that many inmates' families have to endure. However, and frankly, as local and state budgets get tighter and tighter, not allowing these commissions might force correctional facilities to eliminate many important programs. Mr. Chairman, the second bill under discussion is H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act. The FCC created low-power FM station service in 2000 to promote local programming. At the end of 2000, Congress restricted how close low-power stations may operate to full-power stations due to chiefly the interference concerns. As a result, fewer low-power stations can be authorized. This bill would simply repeal the statutory limits. I support the idea of allowing more low-power stations to be licensed. However, such a sweeping policy change needs to balance the potential impact on full-power FM stations, namely interference. Third adjacent protection exists for a reason, to guard against such interference. There is a policy already in place to allow low-power FM stations to operate in the FM band with third adjacent protection. The FCC has licensed more than 865 low-power operators, with more having been granted construction permits or that have applications that are pending. As we consider H.R. 1147, we need to fully examine the impact on full-power FM stations and the issue of interference. A broad blanket policy change may be unnecessary at this time. I hope to work with the sponsors of this bill as we move forward. And last, Mr. Chairman, we are examining H.R. 1804, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act. And I'll compliment the author of the bill with the the word Calm Act. I'm sure they worked hard to get that to come together. This bill would require the FCC to mandate rules within 1 year prohibiting commercials from being excessively noisy or strident. The issue is more complex than it appears. Many different entities are responsible for producing and distributing the content consumers see and hear today. Each element may be recorded and provided at different volume levels. Moreover, shows and movies have a dynamic sound range to cover everything from a quiet scene to an explosion. Commercials, meanwhile, tend to have a narrow sound range. Volume levels are typically set for the programming, which can throw off the volume levels for commercials. 2 years ago, the Advanced Television Systems Committee established a subgroup on digital television loudness. This subgroup consists of the leading experts on audio technology from all the major broadcast networks, cable, production, and post-production, manufacturing, education in the United States of America. Since it was established, these audio technology experts have crafted a hard-fought consensus on the recommended practices that should be employed across the TV industry to deal with TV loudness concerns. Mr. Chairman, I trust the collective wisdom of these technical experts to craft a solution to the TV loudness issue. The subgroup's hard work should not be undone by legislation. One suggestion would be to revise the bill simply so that the FCC rulemaking only commences if industry has not addressed the issue within a certain amount of time. So I think we have perhaps a solution to our problem with this Advanced Television Systems Committee and all the hard work they've done in this area. So, Mr. Chairman, I look forward to the hearing, the witnesses, and I welcome again the opportunity to ask them questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stearns, for a very thoughtful statement. The gentleman from Pennsylvania, Mr. Doyle, is recognized for 5 minutes. I'm sorry, for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding this legislative hearing that includes the bill I introduced with my good friend Lee Terry, H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act. You know, it's appropriate to hold this hearing this morning. I heard on the radio today that today is the 74th anniversary of the first FM broadcast. Students of that story know that the dominant AM broadcaster, RCA, successfully lobbied the FCC to move the FM band, obsoleting the inventor's burgeoning radios, destroying his company, leading the inventor, Edward Armstrong, to suicide, and delaying FM's rollout for decades. We're almost full circle here today, but this story starts a decade ago. In 2000, the Federal Communications Commission started to create new community radio stations run by local schools, churches, community groups, and governments. They did this because their mission from Congress is not to help entrench lobbies, but to make sure as many Americans as possible have access to the public's airwaves to fulfill a basic human need, the right to communicate. Thousands of peoples and groups wanted these new stations and applied. Almost immediately, incumbent broadcasters warned this subcommittee that these new community radio stations would create, and I quote, oceans of interference, harming listeners' efforts to listen to the stations they already know and enjoy. So in response to the broadcaster's concern, Congress called time out and asked for an independent study to examine this issue. The premise of Congress's decision to order the study was that if the study confirmed the FCC's findings, Congress would remove its prohibition on the FCC and allow it to fully implement community radio. Well, the study came back, agreed with the FCC that these stations can be created without harming listeners, and through two unanimous bipartisan votes, the FCC has twice now recommended to Congress to do so. I'm asking Congress to keep its part of the bargain today. After Congress limited community radio in 2001, several groups in my district, the city of Pittsburgh, and some working-class suburbs lost their chance to go on the air. I'll point out that late last month, Mr. Chairman, Pittsburgh's only minority-owned station and the city's only hip-hop and R&B station sold for $9 million. The new owners plan a format change, and now no one else can connect with urban radio listeners in my district. It's almost like incumbent broadcasters wrote the line that William Shakespeare actually wrote in Hamlet. Give every man his ear, but few his voice. Mr. Chairman, we need to make sure that more Americans get a chance to exercise their voice. We must pass this bill, and we must bring low power back to the people. I yield back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Doyle. The gentleman from Nebraska, Mr. Terry, is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding this hearing. I appreciate my friend, Mr. Doyle, and associate myself with your Shakespearean opening statement. And I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank several that have worked hard for this bill, like Hannah Sassman, Corey Hoffman, and Pete Tradish of Prometheus Radio, Michael Bracey of the Future of Music Coalition, the band OK Go, and our very own witness today, Cheryl Lenza with the United Church of Christ. There's numerous benefits by low-power radio stations to smaller communities. And what I mean by smaller communities is both in an urban sense, in a suburban, and even a rural sense. It gives people a voice to their particular community that they may not have now. And as Mike pointed out, the studies have shown that we can technically do low-power FM without stepping on the signals of the higher-power stations. Now, with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to enter into the record the 100 Black Men of Omaha, who are interested as an organization of providing low-power FM within the African-American community of Omaha to provide a platform for discussion of community issues. I ask unanimous consent that I can submit that for the record.
Without objection.
And with that, once again, thank you, but I can't resist on 1133 to say that is this the definition of a captive customer?
That was Congressman Terry, who is also a co-sponsor of H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. That last comment about the captive customer was in reference to Bill H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connections Protection Act of 2009, that addresses the egregiously high costs of collect calls that prisoners or their families must pay in order for the prisoners to be able to call their families. These connections are vital to the rehabilitation, so we don't have to suffer more crime and expensive jails, and they don't have to suffer going back to prison. Also considered in these hearings before Congress that are airing today on Homespun C-SPAN is H.R. 1084, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness and Mitigation Act, CALM Act. It's all about those really loud commercials on TV, going back 50 years now. Now we pick up with Congressman McNearmy, also a co-sponsor of 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009.
Thank you, Mr. Terry. The gentleman from California, Mr. McNearmy, is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding this hearing, and thank you to the witnesses for coming forth today. I'm a co-sponsor of 1147, the Local Community Radio Act. I believe that it's important that the Federal Communication Commission provide equitable rules for low-power FM stations. Our smaller stations deserve to be heard, to be able to provide community-focused programming that serves all of our listeners' needs. Concerning the CALM Act, we've all experienced unpleasant sudden volume changes during TV programming. The problem was identified more than 50 years ago, and many other nations are already adopting standards. Now, there's one experience I had as a young boy. I was a teenager. One of the very Sunday afternoons that my father allowed me to watch TV, which wasn't every Sunday afternoon, I was watching a horror show in the den, and he was out barbecuing, and the advertisement came on, and he came running in, wanted to know what was happening because it was so loud he could hear all the screaming outside. It was somebody selling furniture. So I've experienced this. It would be interesting to see what we have, what we can do about it. So with that, I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. McNearney. The gentleman from Oregon, Mr. Walden, is recognized for 2 minutes.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to get the testimony today from the witnesses on these various bills. I'd like to submit for the record a letter I received from Jefferson Public Radio with regards to H.R. 1147 and some issues that they are raising that I think are very legitimate.
Without objection.
Jefferson Public, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jefferson Public Radio is probably has more translators covering a more rigorous mountain environment, providing public broadcasting in Southern Oregon, probably anywhere else in the country. And they're concerned about the effect that H.R. 1147 would have regarding displacement of their translators. They're further concerned about the language in H.R. 1147, which would give authority to the FCC to go even further than the third adjacent channel relaxation in the rulemakings. And so these are issues that I think the committee needs to look at very carefully. Having been in the broadcast business for more than 21 years, I'm not now a licensee, I share the concern of many who want to make sure that as you move forward on adding additional signals in the marketplace, that there isn't disruptive interference, especially too looking at old receivers versus new receivers. There are legacy radios that aren't as selective as some of the new ones in terms of listening quality and differentiating among the signals. And so I think these are issues we need to look at carefully before we move forward. I'd finally add to the record, too, just a note that I hope the FCC is doing proper and appropriate oversight over LPFMs. They're not supposed to be commercial stations. And it would be interesting to know just kind of the oversight you're doing to see are they operating in some cases as if they were for-profit commercial, because I don't think that was the intent of LPFM, nor is it, I'm sure, of the sponsors of this legislation that they would merge into a full commercial operation. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Look forward to the testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Walden. The gentleman from Michigan, Mr. Stupak, is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be in and out all day, but I did want to have a few comments, especially on H.R. 1147. In all honesty, I'm not real excited about that legislation that's authored by my good friend from Pittsburgh, Mr. Doyle. I understand why this low-power legislation is so important to him. It's probably because it reminds him of his Pittsburgh Penguin front line of Malkin and Crosby. That's the low-power line they have in hockey. And I'm sure if for some reason, some bad calls, my Red Wings come up a little bit of short, I'm sure Mr. Doyle will be in full power telling me about it on Friday and Saturday. I have a minute left if you care to respond there, Mr. Doyle. I'm happy.
Would the gentleman yield? I think you're just going to get interference from him.
Yeah, it will be interference.
Well, I just want to say to my friend that on Monday I'll buy the beer for you to cry in.
It would take more than beer, Doyle. I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Stupak. The gentleman from Illinois, Mr. Rush, chairman of the Subcommittee on Consumer Protection, is recognized for 2 minutes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really am delighted to be here, and I'm also delighted not to have to participate in the previous discussion. The Blackhawks have been out of the have been low power for a long time now, so... Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for holding today's hearing on these important bills. I would like to limit my limited time on the remarks of on H.R. 1133. I introduced this bill with the sincerest concerns for those innocent families and close friends of those individuals who find themselves incarcerated in our jails and prisons. Like you and me, they are telephone services consumers, having the same needs when it comes to hearing their loved ones' voices and maintaining their regular order, regular contact with families, with their families, just as you and I are and many in this room are. Their personal lives, their households, and their budget affairs are complicated by having to choose between accepting a collect phone call from a loved one in prison, which can cost up to five times as much as the same call that you and I would have to make. They have to live with the real-life consequences of that choice, which could mean missing a car, a rent, or a mortgage payment, or not having enough money to buy groceries. There are typically three ways that an inmate that can make and complete a telephone call in most state and county correctional institutions, either collect, prepaid collect, or prepaid by the inmate, which in most cases is paid indirectly by the inmate's family through deposits into their prison debit accounts. For collect calls, the bill party is usually charged a billing cost recovery fee of several dollars for each month that collect call charges are made. On prepaid collect accounts, the inmate telephone services provider collects a fee, usually between $5 and $10, in order to process credit card and check payments over the phone. And for prepaid inmate calls, inmate telephone services providers charge in their neighborhood of $1 for each completed intrastate telephone call. Mr. Chairman, it's patently unfair that family and friends of incarcerated individuals should have to pay these inflated amounts. Revenue sharing agreements entered into by inmate telephone service providers and the correctional authorities they service are the primary cause for this egregious disparity. Some states are collecting commissions from providers of inmate telephone services at rates that are as high as 40% to 65% of gross billed inmate telephone revenues. These commissions continue to have the effect of substantially inflating rates for collect, prepaid, collect, and debit, interstate, and intrastate telephone calls. Simply put, they represent a pass-through of costs from the correctional facilities and jails to the inmates and his or her families. Accordingly, and most notably, my bill, H.R. 1133, focuses on these commission arrangements. It would prohibit the payment of commissions to administrators of correctional institutions and Department of Corrections. It would also require the FCC to promulgate rules that ensure interstate rates for calls that incarcerated individuals make while in confinement are just, reasonable, and non-discriminatory. Finally, it would require providers of inmate telephone services to offer both collect calling and debit account services, which is a cheaper option according to pay telephone service providers because it mitigates the risk of bad debt associated with collect calling. Mr. Chairman, I would like to thank you for holding this hearing, and I ask I'm glad to have the witnesses here to testify on behalf of my bill. Thank you, and I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rush. The gentleman from North Carolina, Mr. Butterfield, is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for convening this hearing, and I particularly want to thank Chairman Rush for introducing this legislation. This is not the first Congress in which he's introduced this bill. He's done it in Congress's past, and I thank him for his sensitivity to this issue. As most of you know, I served as a trial judge in my state for many years before coming to Congress. I sat on the highest trial bench in my state and presided over felony cases and very serious crimes. As a consequence of my work, there were many people that I had the unfortunate and unpleasant task of incarcerating. But I want to tell you from personal experience that the telephone system between the jails and the prisons and communities is really in need of revamping. It would break my heart when mothers and grandmothers and family members would call me from time to time and tell me that these are poor people, who would have $300 and $400 telephone bills, because their loved ones would call collect from the jail. And what does a grandmother say when her grandchild is calling her collect from the jail? The only thing she knows to do is to accept the charges. And so this legislation that we have before us today is certainly a step in the right direction. It is not the ideal legislation. I wish we could do more. I've always said that one remedy for the problem would be to create a debit card, just like we have here in the cafeteria. Whenever I want to go get a meal, I go downstairs and I put this debit card in and I get my meal. We could do this in the jails and make it very effective. The other thing that we could do would be have cell phones in the prisons and in the jails that would be controlled, not unlimited cell phones. But the prisoners could get cell phones for 30 minutes a day and use those cell phones. And at the conclusion of the call, they could turn in the cell phones and they could be locked up and kept away from the prisoners. So thank you, Mr. Rush. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having this hearing today. This is a step in the right direction. I yield back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Butterfield. We turn now to our panel of witnesses.
Thank you for listening to Homespun C-SPAN. You just heard the first segment of the U.S. House of Representative legislative hearings on three bills all melded together into one hearing, H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connections Protection Act of 2009, and H.R. 1084, the Commercial Advertisement Lobbyist Mitigation Act, CALM Act. And, as well, last but not least, H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009, in regards improvements in the condition of LPFM that will allow thousands of little WRIRs to be in urban areas all over the United States, as well as provide the option for WRIR to have a clearer signal. These hearings were recorded last week, Thursday, June 11th, in the Rayburn House office building. You could call and email your friends and family all over the world to call their Congress Gritter to become co-sponsors of H.R. 1147. Just like in Rwanda, the voices of internal war and civil terrorism are beating their drums on Clear Channel, Fox News, and huge religious radio networks. But rather than moving to censorship, it's better to build 1,000 little WRIRs in every urbanized area of the United States. H.R. 1147 can make that possible.